Hi, this is Jo Martin, and welcome to the One of Many Voices podcast, where you can meet one of many women who will inspire you to have more, give more, without necessarily having to do a lot more. Today we're meeting Elaine Wilkins, an ambassador for sufferers of chronic fatigue and ME, and the founder of The Chrysalis Effect. I'm really thrilled to have on the podcast today Elaine Wilkins. Now, Elaine Wilkins was diagnosed with ME, some of us know it as chronic fatigue syndrome, back in the year 2000. She noticed she was ill after a trip abroad where she picked up a bit of a virus and she just couldn't seem to shake it. Now, this is really interesting for those of us in the One of Many community because so many of us, I think, are heading towards some of these exhaustive conditions like chronic fatigue, like ME, like fibromyalgia. Elaine, like many women who come down with this, and men for that matter, are go-getters, high achievers. She had a wildly successful training business, which because of this incredible condition, she lost. She had to sell her home, and she really did, you know, hit rock bottom in terms of for someone who's a total overachiever. Now, because of this, she says this is actually what shaped her to be who she is today and doing what she does today. Since then, she has gone on to start The Chrysalis Effect, which is an awesome organization working with sufferers of chronic fatigue, ME, fibromyalgia, helping them to regain their well-being. And they have helped literally hundreds of people to do that. What's more, and perhaps the more leveraged version of what Elaine is doing, is she's now trained over 1,000 practitioners in ME and chronic fatigue recovery, in what it really takes to recover from this illness, which a lot of GPs just totally don't understand, and some of them don't even believe exists, right? Now, I'm super excited for Elaine because just recently she's presented her recovery program to the NHS and they are excited by it. And it is now up to the stage where it is being circulated out to the Academic Science Network for evaluation and adoption. It's been in the makings now and working now for 6 years, the extraordinary work of The Chrysalis Effect. So I'm really, really thrilled that Elaine has joined us on the line today. And we're here to talk not only about Elaine's story, but also what we can learn as overachieving superwomen when we're out there trying to practice our soft power. So thanks heaps for joining us, Elaine. It's really great to have you on the line.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure, Jo. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's going to be good, actually, because I think it's really important for us to talk vitality. One of the we talk about a platform for leadership with everything that we do in One of Many. And the pillars of that platform that we talk about are fulfillment in our work. We talk about wealth. We talk about love and relationships. And then our vitality is one of these four crucial pillars, because without it, we have absolutely nothing, as you have experienced, obviously. I wonder if firstly you could take us back to this personal side of your story, back to when you arrived back from overseas with the lurgy and jet lag, this virus. How were you feeling at the time? Where were you at?
Yeah, Jo, I'd been on a business trip. It was a long haul flight. So at first, the extreme tiredness I just thought was jet lag. But I'd been having a few issues with my throat for a while, actually. Amazing how the seat of communication is in your throat.
Right.
And I just thought I'd picked up something on the plane, to be honest. It felt like flu, but actually I was having problems with things like recalling words. My head felt like it was kind of stuffed with hot cotton wool. And I just had this debilitating exhaustion. It just went on and on. And my body felt like it was sort of jangling. And I hear that a lot with people. You know, it's like you've got this sort of juddering going on inside your body.
Wow.
I just felt ill all over. And in fact, so ill, I physically couldn't move. It was as if I'd completely shut down. It took weeks for me to sort of regain any type of energy before I could sort of move. And instead of resting and realizing my body was trying to tell me something, guess what I did? I joined a gym. I got myself up. If I just had more stamina, I would have been fine. So I had an induction and I came home, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back. It tipped me over into a full-blown crash. And then everything changed forever that day. And I ended up bedbound with absolutely no idea what had happened.
Wow. So what was your life like before that? Well, before that work trip that where you were overseas, were you going pretty hard?
Oh, I certainly was. You know, it was supposed to be a holiday that I'd won, you know, or earned. But it didn't really, holidays didn't really exist for me. Every trip I took, even to fabulous places, you know, like the Bahamas or Australia or wherever, because it was a lot of that involved in what I was doing. Everything I did was about work. You know, I hadn't always been that way. I'd run my own businesses since I was 20, really. I was 20 years a hairdresser with my own salons, you know. Mm. And then I transitioned. I wanted a career change, and I transitioned into education and training. And I really fell in love with delivering courses in women's empowerment. So up until that point, I'd always had a fairly balanced life. You know, I'd always been a doer and a worker. But I'd always had a good social life, good balance or friends. But the change came when I joined actually an American multi-level marketing cosmetic company. I had no idea what I was getting into, really. And, you know, I just got sort of completely caught up. I progressed so fast in this company that I was running a team of 125 women really quickly. And the mantra of the company was women helping women. And that's what I kind of did, you know, and I just helped everyone whenever they needed it. And I was so enthusiastic that I started sort of breaking records in the company and doing really well, but it became a bit addictive. And so my schedule just was stupid. It was ridiculous. It was normal for me to do about 70 hours a week. And yeah, and I sort of, looking back, I couldn't see it at the time, but it was like my life just got hijacked somewhere. You know, there were these constant incentives with like loads of recognition. I mean, I'm talking here, Joe, diamonds, Mercedes, luxury trips. I mean, what woman wouldn't get, you know, sort of stars in their eyes a bit? But it was just mad. But, you know, the pace really did take its toll on me. And actually, there was a part of the job I absolutely hated and I was forcing myself to do. So I was being inauthentic. And we know that's the start of everything. You know, that's what I've learned.
Yeah, so important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I became really preoccupied with what I had to do all the time. And I just couldn't switch off. And now, of course, I realized I was just running on adrenaline. And ultimately, it led to this health crash.
Now, I know with my medical background, I can totally appreciate that doctors are not really great at acknowledging things unless there's a whole bunch of evidence-based medicine or scientific evidence, around it. At the time, you know, back into the year 2000, what were your doctors telling you at that point? Was there recognition of how you were feeling, or what was the story?
Oh, no recognition at all. So you know, obviously started going along and told, you know, tried to explain how I was feeling. And of course, never been someone that's been to the doctors very much. They don't sort of know how you were. So I just sort of, you know, turned up looking like this, you know, broken shell of a person, really. But once all the blood tests were completed, they pretty much shrugged their shoulders, and there was no explanation at all. And ultimately, it took me 18 months to get a medical diagnosis.
Wow.
Which, you know, and then I insisted on an MRI scan as well, because it was just really, to have that many symptoms going on, it was just terrifying, and have absolutely no answers. But ultimately, when I got the diagnosis, there's a relief for a moment. And then I realized there was no plan, there was no explanation, and I was just offered pills and told to go home and pace, you know. So I literally went home, and I was like the mad woman in the attic, you know. I was sort of up in the bed all day long, because couldn't function. And that was it, pretty much.
Wow. How did you feel then? I imagine you were feeling really lost and alone.
I was. It was really frightening, because by this time I had day-night reversal. So while the family slept, I was awake. I was had this wired feeling. So I just could not rest. I just couldn't sleep. Mm. I'd lost sensation all down one side of my body. So I'd lay awake all night feeling sort of broken with this constant anxiety loop of thoughts, you know, and how that starts. It's like, what happens if I don't get well? I won't be able to earn. I'm going to lose my business. And then if I lose my business, you know, we're going to end up with it. And that was what my brain was doing the whole time. And I was convinced I had an undiagnosed brain tumor or multiple cirrhosis. That was my real abiding fear, that somehow they hadn't diagnosed it. But really, I was, as bad as I felt, I just had this drive to search for answers. And it was really hard because being on the computer made me feel so sick, and I had horrendous migraines, irritable bowel syndrome. I had just so many symptoms, and all I was offered was antidepressants and sleeping tablets over and over again. When I did get, you know, to the point where I thought I better go back to the doctor, that's all I was ever offered.
Wow.
And then I stumbled across this book on chronic fatigue syndrome, which was lovely, because the first page said this condition has been described as a living death and said I might end up in a wheelchair. But I just absolutely refused to believe that. But it was really frightening, and I just felt completely isolated, really.
That's just incredible. And I expect that you're not alone in that. I guess that, again, that story is a very common one where there's no kind of societal support in place, there's no education around it, no one really understands what's going on, I suppose, is where it starts, isn't it? And so it's really hard to create support networks. I mean, for you, I mean, life wouldn't have stopped. Life still would have been moving at a really fast pace. You know, you had a business. How did you handle kind of having to pull back from society? How did you handle having to sit there in the bed all day, every day? And what did you notice about the way people started to treat you at that time?
Well, once the symptoms really took hold, I just had no choice, Joe, right, but to stop. And that was just, for somebody that had always been, you know, able to do things and, you know, always find a way and a solution through everything, I just had no choice. And but what it did do is it gave me a lot of thinking time, and I realized I'd sort of actually been losing my health for a really long time, and there'd been quite a long period of time where I was actually hiding my illness from people,
right? I so was been, you know, there under the radar.
Yeah, absolutely. I was either working or I was in bed for a long period of time. You know, I was literally falling into bed to rest, to get up and do more work. That was all my life had become. And I'd hear the phone ringing and I couldn't move. And I'd tell people, I was out that day, or I was busy, rather than admit I was ill. I mean, I really did have a problem. So when I finally admitted it and told people, I actually felt really ashamed. And it was hard because at the time there was a kind of stigma around this condition. You know, there was the whole yuppie flu thing that people used to call it, right, which I absolutely hated. And I was convinced, like most people are at this stage, that I'd caught something and they just hadn't ever found it, you know. And it was, and it still can be, really misunderstood. And I ended up, it was horrendous. Eventually, I ended up on incapacity benefit. This is someone who's always run their own businesses, you know.
Wow.
But it was a big lesson. You know, most of the people that I'd been working to help and driving myself in the ground for disappeared when I stopped being life and soul of the party and wasn't able to give them what they needed. You know, they all just drifted vanished away. Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. But my husband and daughter were my 100% supporters. My son was young and he just couldn't handle seeing me like that. So that was really difficult. But the rest of the family sort of swept it under the carpet, didn't really want to, I didn't understand it, so they didn't want to know it. So it wasn't a great place.
Mm. This is why what you're doing now with the Chrysalis Effect organization, the foundation, everything is so important, Elaine. I really take my hat off to you, and we'll have a little chat about that in a moment. But I'm really interested, do you think this illness forced you to live more from your feminine energy, like step into soft power? Did you have any language for that at the time? Did you know you'd been kind of living from a masculine energy place, or was it just, you know, you were looking at adrenaline versus I need to do things differently?
Yeah, it was it's all of that stuff, that realization around the different energies and the feminine energy and everything came much, much later.
Right.
But really, it was the best gift ever, this illness. I mean, I always say that, you know, that's why we have the butterfly. It's an opportunity for a second chance, you know. And and the thing was, because I'd always been such a control freak, this illness meant that my husband took over everything. And he sort of became the parents to my, you know, to our teenage children. And he held down a demanding job. And looking back, he was pretty lost at that stage because I'd always been the driving force in the relationship. I'd been that masculine energy without realizing it. You know, I was the ideas person, the planner, my way is the only way type of person, you know. So I developed this sort of self-sufficiency without ever realizing it. And I'd been living more and more in my masculine energy. And I suppose emasculating him really over the years, and I hadn't ever realized that. And I was always trying to control the uncontrollable, and then suddenly I was incapacitated. So, but you know, and I was really hard on him because I remember saying to him, you know, I'm fading before your eyes and you're just letting me, because I'd never been someone to just accept things, you know. And my husband's really a go with the flow type guy, you know. And I'd always be the one who did something, and this time I couldn't. And but what it was great was I sort of realized people loved me. You know, those that really love me, they love me for not for what I did, which is how I defined myself, but for who I was. And, you know, and if I needed to rest, it was okay. And a huge part of my recovery, I think, was accepting care and allowing others to support me. Yeah. And I found it really hard at first, and it gave me, but it did give me time, you know, to sort of reevaluate every aspect of my life. And I found this lovely book as well, which your listeners might might love to look up. It was The Day Book of Comfort and Joy by Sarah Ann Breathnach. And a page a day for each day of the year. And I started looking at all these lovely things that you could do to nurture yourself. And, you know, I started making time for afternoon cup of tea on a tray made properly in bone china instead of squeezing a tea bag and a mug on the rush, you know. And so my feminine energy began to sort of emerge, and it sort of started bringing back the joy of small everyday things, you know, back into my life, really.
Oh, I love it, Elaine. That just sounds delicious. And I mean, it's a shame that it takes something like that for some of us to get it, but that did get it, I think, is crucial. And you're being acknowledged for that too, I think, which is important. I mean, you won an award this year for the Courage to Change with the Association of Professional Coaches, Trainers and Consultants, which is basically coaching industry awards here in the UK. Do you think that recognition, I'm interested, because recognition was a big part of what got you into the problem, right? And, you know, now here's some more recognition. What do you think about recognition? Is it important, or is it more about your community? What is it for you these days?
Well, the recognition has made a huge difference, I have to say. You know, for years now, we've just been doing what we do every day, and the ups and downs of business, and just, you know, having this passion to ensure that people don't have the, you know, aren't left in the situation I was in, really. But to get an award in recognition of these sort of three vital changes that we're implementing in sort of ME, CFS and fibromyalgia recovery, it was such an honour. So it did push my recognition button, I have to be really honest.
And I think that's okay. You know?
I mean, got a lovely...
And look, the fact that the NHS are interested, and I know some, you know, large and reputable organisations are really looking to get behind what you've done. This is not just someone who's decided to throw together some kind of a coaching program. This is an extraordinary breakthrough in the areas of these chronic exhaustive conditions. You're actually really, truly helping people to recovery, and many, many hundreds and indeed thousands are benefiting from that, which is so, so brilliant. There's a lot of talk about this work-life balance, life-work balance, and you've spoken quite a bit about what it looks like for you. So I guess to kind of complete here, I wonder if there's any final piece of advice you'd leave our community with, perhaps to support them in that arena.
Yeah, I've definitely. These are just things that I think are crucial, really. So look at your diary and see how it makes you feel. And if your heart sinks, change it now. You know, that's one thing. I think having a lovely mentor of mine taught me that you can't delegate your home life. And I think childminders, dog walkers, cleaners and gardeners are all really handy, but don't rely on them totally, because I think doing everyday stuff is the fabric of family life. And I learned that one. I think turn your phone off when you're with those you love, definitely. And find out what makes your heart sing and do much more of it. And finally, I think never compromise your well-being for anyone or anything, because it just isn't worth it.
That's some really, really profound advice and some great tips and strategies there, Elaine. That's just just brilliant. I really love that you can't delegate your home life. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, use the dog walker if you need to, if you're away. But yeah. Walking the dog is probably one of the best things you can do for yourself, right?
Spot on.
That's really smart. Really, really smart. Listen, Elaine, it has been absolutely delicious spending some time with you today. And I think, as I say, for many women in the One of Many community, we are like you. We, you know, have a superwoman streak. Many of us, it's a mile wide, and it is fueled by achievement and recognition and all of these kind of masculine paradigm things. There's nothing wrong with any of that stuff, right? But to the extent that it pulls us away from our well-being, it really can be quite. Well, not just soul destroying, but actually quite body destroying as well. And that's the story that you've shared with us today and is so powerful. So I just want to finish with a massive acknowledgement of all of the work you're doing. To find out more about Elaine, you can go to thechrysaliseffect.com. If you want to support her, get in touch. That would be, I'm sure the door's always open for anyone who has contacts or get this message out there, because it is so, so important. I know in the One of Many community, we see a lot of women who've either been through this or can feel themselves knocking at the door of it and need to slow down and change the way they're doing things. So thanks heaps for being with us today, Elaine. It's been fabulous speaking with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jo. It's been brilliant. Thanks so much for inviting me.
You've been listening to One of Many Voices, where you can discover one of many great ideas for leading a more fruitful and fulfilling life. I look forward to speaking to you on our next podcast really soon.